My name is Phil Hutchings. I'm from here in the United States, grew up in New York, Ohio area, and have lived now in Oakland, California. And Yvette asked me to talk a little bit about the consequences of the war here in the States, and with maybe some emphasis on communities of color. How am I introduced here? I'm a co-founder of the Institute for Multiracial Justice, which is based here in San Francisco. And the mission of that organization, which is a resource center, is trying to work together to build alliances domestically, particularly around different communities of color and within communities of color. And also I'm a member of the Black Radical Congress, which is a national organization, started in 1998. I was going to just mention three things, and talk a little bit about three things, because it's that's about all my time limit is, and it's also too hot to talk about much more than that. And I was thinking, as I was looking at them, they kind of are actually more consequences out of 9/11 than they are the war of Iraq, though there's a great overlap in many ways. And the three I want to mention just in passing, and Sylvia actually talked a lot about the third one I wanted to talk about. And I didn't realize it was so dark in here, because I actually brought some things for people to look at. But the first one has to do with the fact that, and these are things that you're all aware of, but I'm just trying to focus them, is the unlimited amount of money for war and a declining amount of money for domestic concerns in this country. It happens at a time when the economy is stalled and is in a recession. It happens at a time when there are huge budget deficits. Here in California, we have by far the largest one in the country, both in terms of absolute dollars as well as percentage-wise. We have whole school systems going under. Where I'm from, Oakland is requesting $100 million from the state, the largest loan in the history of the state of California. And in the process of doing it, they will lose all of their local control. And just at the time when they were beginning to think that they were getting somewhere. And that's happening in different ways all over the state and in other ways all over the country. And people are questioning, what does it mean to have this huge military budget? I took this from a paper which some of you have seen called War Times. And it talks about how the military budget soars and how much the war is costing in terms of the future. Not to mention the present of not just communities of color, which are usually on the bottom and have the least of everything, but in terms of Americans as a whole. And so that what we find increasingly is that we're more beginning to ask to cut back and to basically make for so-called democracy somewhere else and so-called reconstruction somewhere else. And that there's never been any real vote to support that kind of economic a balance. So that's a biggie, and it forces all kind of problems in domestic places in the United States. Well, here I can actually pass this one around, and it has a couple nice graphics about what the war in Iraq cost, even in terms of minutes. It basically has also, in some ways, raised the question within the anti-war movement of, are we focusing just on the war against Iraq, or is there a broader issue? I mean, more and more people are using the words empire building, that basically what the Bush and the right-wing ideologues who are running this country are basically pushing is building an empire, where there will be many wars against yet unnamed opponents, and that the military budget is basically a permanent war economy, and that essentially people of color, working class people in this country, are being asked to sacrifice more and more, and particularly, as I say, at a time when the economy is going further and further down. And then we have a situation where with these huge deficits, we have our president asking for tax cuts. I mean, if the government doesn't have enough money, the people who can afford to give the government some money, the rich people, are getting a tax cut. So it's like, we don't have to be great economists to realize this doesn't make sense. In fact, Bush's daddy once called this voodoo economics. He became famous for that phrase. And we're seeing it continue, but in a different context, and basically an unlimited war. And that the fact that the U.S. is basically fighting not just Iraq, but increasingly all over the world. Troops in the Philippines, troops in parts of Asia, we have troops in Afghanistan, Bosnia, Philippines, et cetera, et cetera. And that is continuing. Troops are now in parts of Africa. That just began to happen. So it's like that's growing. And so it raises the question in our communities, what we call that the problem of how do you build a movement around that. I mean, we talk about the war in Iraq, the anti-imperialist war, but also we have to deal with what we call the everyday war, the war around police in our communities, the war against the fact that Oakland had 113 murders last year. We couldn't get the anti-war movement to have one demonstration around that. But if something happens outside the country, around the world, we have huge demonstrations. And so what's that all about? And it makes us realize that many people who have primarily white skins, even though they have, in many ways, progressive politics, are much more identified with the fate of this country as a nation state than many of the poor working class communities of color who have to fight a war every day to survive. So that's like the first thing. The second thing is the declining attack on civil liberties. And again, I want to take a source which is not a radical source. It's one that we all know, Time Magazine. And they had an interesting thing. I mean, they talked about the new tools in the war on terror and how terror and the war on terrorism has become open, increasingly is open. And there's no great definition for terrorism. Kind of like that famous definition for pornography. I don't know what it is, can't define it, but I know when I see it. And so a lot of terrorism is the same way. But the point being from the Patriot Act, which was the initial act that set up all these draconian measures, to what is upcoming but has not been presented yet, the Patriot Act 2, is the definition of terrorism is extending. And the idea is to get people scared enough about the threat of terrorism in the present so that any type of activities, laws, procedures can, of course, begin to increase that more. So there are the Pentagon, FBI, trying to do these what they call national security letters, which would go to credit card companies, which would go to internet providers, to basically know what you're doing and be on top of it. Most of us already know that the libraries are already have been forced to basically say that what you borrow from a library can basically be given to the government. Interesting, in today's edition of the San Francisco Weekly, one I haven't even heard yet, is they talk about as of April 14th, the National Security Police can monitor your medical records without your knowledge, and also so can the local police. And it's on the newsstands today, and it's something that is, it's basically showing how the national security state is increasingly using this idea of the war on terrorism abroad and the need to fight the war on terrorism at home to narrow increasingly the space for democratic rights, democratic activity, and of course any type of real opposition at the same time. And just a couple ones that they mentioned here is how you have a no-fly list now, and where they can pull you off the plane if they think you are going to be a problem. And while many times it's people who look like what people may think an Arab might look like, the two people who are profiled here are right from San Francisco, Jan Adams and Rebecca Gordon, who are two white women, both American citizens and activists for a long time, and they got pulled off on a plane to Boston, and so what opens up as something to hit the most vulnerable part of the community, non-citizens, so-called aliens, Muslims, Arabs, terrorists, begins to happen. Once you open that gate, you can begin to do it against anybody. There's also the question where you can do search and seizure, where the FBI, local police can do search and seizure of your property, your assets, because somebody reported that maybe you might be doing something, and so you are liable for that. You also have detaining residents who are basically non-citizens, foreign nationals, but do have their green cards and have status in this country, and they can be detained, not to mention people who are illegals. And also you have people who are seeking asylum in this country, like Haitians or other people who, of course, that becomes another act to say that, in fact, that Rumsfeld was actually quoted as saying, well, while the Haitians weren't themselves a danger, you couldn't let the Haitians come in, not that we ever have, because terrorists might use Haiti as a springboard to migrate into the United States. Great bits of logic. So I'm going to pass these out, also just to pass around, and just to again to see visual examples of this. And I guess I hear many people who are older than me talk about this begins to feel like McCarthyism all over again. But McCarthyism in an international context. And in a way that even was far much farther beyond what old Joe McCarthy tried to do. So the closing of space, the gutting of civil liberties, and the surveillance. I mean, the thing that's probably, to me, the most scary is they have actually been able, through the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, able to create secret courts where people, and this has happened already, particularly with some of the people who were involved around, who are allegedly thought to be, that's the more correct way, around the 9/11, were basically detained. They were put in secret courts. They were not told. They had no access to lawyers. They didn't even know what the accusations were against them. They didn't have a chance to confront their accusers, something that goes back to the Magna Carta in the year 1215 that has become part of U.S. law. And so the enormity of this is really very tremendous, and that the Bush administration is using this at the same time they are using the war budget and the push to the global empire as a way to have a passive population in this country. And of course they use the racism because they know in this country who are the people who have the least interest in pursuing wars anywhere when they're not getting the basics in this country, and who don't feel that they are full citizens in this country, and so it's been pushing for the racism here. The last thing I want to mention is what Sylvia talked about, is the repression against Muslim, Arab, and South Asian immigrants. And while there has been racial profiling for years, and we now talk about driving while black and flying while Muslim and stuff like that, is that the enormity of the roundups that have happened since September 11th during the war in Iraq and after the war in Iraq in terms of communities and with practically no protests is probably more reminiscent of what happened to the Japanese in 1942 than anything since that time period. So that's also been a major consequence, and people can just look through this also, which probably goes into some detail on that. So I think we're in some ways in a historically new situation, which is very dangerous. I haven't tried to talk about what we can do, and I guess some of that will come out when people go back and forth, but I think we're in a situation where it's very tight. I might find one thing I would say, what I find interesting is one response which has been to go two ways, and they're not necessarily opposite, is you find some people who are more trying to figure out that the focus should be now on 2004. We have to defeat George Bush. We have to get him out by any means necessary. And basically to find a Democrat, no independent candidate can basically win. So since the real focus is getting Bush out, we have to find a Democrat, whether it's a Howard Dean, Kucinich, et cetera, or yet a named Democrat to do that. So there are many people who are already beginning to mobilize on that category. And then you have the other side, the other end, which are many of the people who have been out in the street doing the protests saying, we have to go beyond just having big protests. Not that we should stop having big protests, but we need to have all kinds of resistance. Some of what you were talking about, and begin to, in some ways, kind of the slogan that came out of South Africa in the fight against apartheid to make this country ungovernable. And so that, in some ways, is the real challenge. How do we merge those strategies? How do we choose one? How do we build a movement? How do we deal with the conflicts between people of color and, for most part, whites who are all in the movement but still are not united, and how do we move forward?